Good morning. Today's daf in Ksuvos Chav Zayin. We're in Chav Vav Amud Beis. We're going to start again at the Mishnah. I started the Mishnah yesterday. We started the Gemara, but let's start again. We are winding down here at the end of the second parak. I feel like I've been saying that now for a couple days already, but it's true. We are winding down. Just a couple more days to go before concluding the second parak, beginning third parak. Third parak in the yeshivas is a very popular parak, but when we get there, I'll give it more of a formal introduction. In the meantime, however, so here in the second parak, if we can just give a brief summary sentence regarding the second parak, peshas or peshiter, the ability for somebody to give certain personal testimony and to be believed. In other words, that's usually a rarity. In halacha, you are not credible regarding yourself, and yet, under certain circumstances, limited circumstances, but you are going to be believed by yourself. The best way to formulate that is a peshas or peshiter. And that is that when you say something which compromises yourself and puts you in a position of liability, so then you're going to have the nemanus and the credibility to go ahead and to say something that will extricate yourself from that from that first statement. Good. And we gave multiple examples. I'd say a half dozen examples here in this parak detailing a peshas or peshiter. We are going to stay somewhere along that line of thinking and a line that line of concept. And as we go into the next mission, we started this mission yesterday, but let's start again today, fresh, and we'll start from the beginning of the sugya. So we are in Chav Vav Amud Beis, and we begin with the mission. Aisha Shenichbasha, so the woman, so she was taken. And Bideo of Dekochem, she was taken by non-Jews, so it depends why she was taken. Ayde Mamon, so Mater Sabala, so Ishi was taken for monetary consideration, meaning that right now, either she owes or her husband owes. Let's say that she owes money, and she just simply defaulted. So back in the day, and you know this doesn't speak well about back in the day, but back in the day, so they would just take her, and they would hold her until somebody would pay. So if that would be the case, so she is going to be muter sabala. She's going to be permitted to her husband. Okay. The way Rashi sets it up, and I'm going to present it like Rashi, meaning with the understanding that Rashi is not the only way to say over the Gemara, but again, for the purpose of Daf Yomi, it's what we do all the time, and that is that we just simply give a straightforward, streamlined presentation of the Gemara, and we're going to say it over like Rashi. The way Rashi presents it is that we assume that she did not have bia at all, meaning right now, she's an asset. The only reason why she's being taken is for financial reasons, meaning that she's just simply leveraged against an obligation that she owes. And so as a result of that, as an asset, she's going to be protected. Even while she's taken, she's going to be protected. And she did not have bia at all, meaning not even bones, which means, again, I'm just saying it like Rashi, which means that even if she's married to a Kohen, we will assume that she was not violated at all. On the other hand, I identify, but let's say that she was taken to be put to death. In other words, that she was charged of a crime. Whether she committed or not, it's irrelevant to the discussion. She was charged with a crime, and she was taken to be executed. So now, Asur Labala, she's going to be prohibited to her husband. Now, again, the way Rashi presents it, and again, I know I said this before, but disclaimer, I am just presenting the Gemara like Rashi. This is not the only way to present it, but the way Rashi presents it is that now, at this point in time, she's going to have relations with her captors, meaning on the chance that maybe this will create a certain amount of sympathy so that she won't be executed. So she'll have bia beretzon with her captors. Now, I know the issue, which, again, we're not going to be discussing, but it is an important issue, is this really called beretzon? Meaning right now she's doing so that hopefully she'll live. So maybe this falls under the category of onus, but again, the way Rashi presents it, it's bia beretzon, and therefore she's going to be prohibited. And even if she's married to Yisrael, she's going to be prohibited. Because again, she's now having a willful, adulterous affair with another man. Okay, that's the way Rashi presents it. And again, I understand that this is not the only way to present it, but I'm just saying it over like Rashi. Now, Amar Shmuel Barav Yisak Amar Avlo Shanu, Ela Shiad Yisrael Tkifa Al Ovdei Kochavim. Okay, this idea that when she was taken for money, she's going to be protected. In other words, she's just being taken as a security against an obligation. And therefore, they're not going to touch her. And they're certainly not going to have relations with her. So, avayarov de kocham tekif al atzman, afilu al yedei mamon asur labala. Now, but let's say, I'm sorry, the limitation that's given by Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak in the name of Rav is that the only time that she's going to be protected is only when she was taken by non-Jews, but it was a lawful state, meaning the state was operated, owned and operated by the Jewish people. So under those circumstances, they are now going to conform to some basic rules of engagement. In other words, they're not going to touch her. But if the state is a lawless state, meaning it's a non-Jewish state and it's a lawless state, so then now when they take her, even if it's al yidei mamon, even if it's for a financial obligation, at that point in time, all bets are off. And now the chances are is that they had their way with her. Now, it's fair to wonder whether or not the assumption over here is that if it's a lawless state, are they going to violate her? Or is she going to have relations willingly? Difference is whether or not she's going to be usher to a Kohen or even to an usher to Yisrael. Okay, but anyway, but that's the distinction that's made. Mace of Rava, so Rava challenges, hey, Rav Yossi HaKohen. So over here, we have a Braisa. And Rav Yossi HaKohen testifies. The Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatsav Abbas Yisrael Shehur Hanam be'Ashkelon. Okay, so a woman was taken in Ashkelon. Now, Hur Hana is usually the language that's used to describe collateral. So in other words, this is a financial issue. And she defaulted, and they took her. And V'richa b'nei mishpachta. V'eideh ha'meidim o'sar shalon istra v'shalon itma. And now what the family did is that because she was taken by non-Jews, and again, we know this was a financial issue, but she was taken by non-Jews, and the family basically said, we don't know what happened. And they withdrew from her. And there were witnesses who testified that she did not have relations. So, Amlem Chachamim imatem ma'aminim shurana ha'mina shalon istra v'shalon nidma v'imiyata ma'aminim shalon istra v'shalon nidma ta'aminu shurana. And basically the Chachamim said, you have witnesses, right? I'm not translating word for word, but basically you have witnesses. And once you have witnesses, you're good. And now the Gemara constructs its argument. And that is Ashkelon diarov dekocham tkifa ma'atzman. So first of all, we're going to start with Ashkelon. Ashkelon is Plishtim country, right? Rashi describes over here Eret Plishtim he vod kfar galu Yisrael, meaning that at this point in time, historically, Ashkelon was no longer under Jewish rule, reverted back to non-Jewish rule, okay, governed by the Plishtim, and Kitani, as we now turn to the top of Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. Hurana in Nichba Shalom. And a distinction to be made between Hurana and Nichba Shalom. Now, I don't fully understand the distinction, but Rashi is going to be helpful. Rashi writes over here on the top of the Amud, Hurana de Midas. Hurana is basically where there was some sort of agreement. Okay, this is going to sound a little bit off, but again, we are living in an entirely different society, an entirely different worldview. But in other words, but basically written into the terms of the loan is that upon default, what I'm going to do is that, in other words, I'm going to sell, I collateralize myself against the loan, against the obligation, if in the event that I default. Okay. So, and so midas. And Rashi writes over here, I'm reading the top Rashi. The came and the giyaz man v'lo niftes hare he shall of the kochavim b'dinehem. Mishum hachbi'ina meidim ha'meidim osa shalom nistara. So over here, being that it was a more willful, willing giving up of herself, so therefore the only way that we can make assurances that she was not violated is only if there were edim. However, nichbasha is to be taken against her will. There was never any kind of term of agreement to this kind of deal. So under those circumstances, you don't need witnesses if it's over mammon. So Hurana inech b'shalom. And so what we are now presenting is what seemingly is a problem, because now it comes out that in the case of Nechbasha, even though it was Plishtim, we don't need Edim. Now remember what was said over the name of Rav is that our Mishnah that says that if she was taken for financial consideration, so she doesn't need Edim. But Rav said, but that's only in a lawful state, meaning if it was a state abiding, if the law, it was of a law abiding state. In other words, the Jewish people were running the state. But in the event that non-Jews were running the state, so then no, all bets are off and you need aid them. And here, in this particular Ibraisa, what it sounds like, what we know is that it was Eretz Plishtim. And what it sounds like is that in the case of Hurana, and only in the case of Hurana, you need Edom, but if it's Nechpasha, you don't need Edom. That's what it sounds like. So the Gemara just sidesteps the issue by simply saying no. So Hu Adin Afilu Nechpasha. No, the halacha would be, doesn't matter whether or not her being taken was part of the terms of the loan, not part of the terms of the loan, it would be the same. The halacha would be the same. Why is the Braisa giving such a specific example? Because it's a case, meaning the Braisa is a case study. So the reason why the Braisa chose that case is because it actually happened. But Hu Adin, the same thing would be true, whether or not it was part of the terms of the agreement, it wasn't part of the terms of the agreement. And we're going to say this over a number of different ways, and the next part of the Gemara we can go through pretty quickly. Ika de Amri, another version, Amri Rav Afanami Tanina. We learned the same thing in the Braisa as well. Hey, Rabbi Yosef, come, Rabbi Zechariah ben Katzav Abbas Yisrael Shurana Bashkolim V'richka B'nei Mishpach Tavei Dem Eidem Ala Shalom Nistarav Shalom Nitma V'Amru Chachamim Im Atem Ma'aminim Shurana Ha'aminu Shalom Nistarav Shalom Nitma V'im Ein Atem Ma'aminim Shalom Nistarav Shalom Nitma Al Ta'aminu Shurana. Okay, so again, a repeat of the entire Braisa. Good. Chazara within the Daf. Good. V'ha'ashkolim Da'ide Mamonhu Hava. And so now the Gemara here notes that Ashkelon, it was monetary. In other words, she was taken for monetary consideration. And the only reason why she is Tahora is because of witnesses testifying. But if witnesses didn't testify, so then no, she wouldn't be permitted. So my love, in this version, we immediately start off by saying, it doesn't matter whether or not Hurana, which again, part of the terms of the loan, if I default, you can take me as collateral. Or if it was not part of the terms of the loan, and nichbasha. So the Gemara says, and isn't there a distinction to be made? The Gemara says, no. Lo. Hurana shani. Hurana shani. And over here now, we could just simply say that, no. Hurana is going to be different. Again, once it's part of the terms of the loan. So then she put herself in that compromised position. As a result of that, the only way that we could say she's Tahora is only if there are Edom. Okay. Iga de Ramilei Mirma. We're going to do one more round of this. And that is Tanan, Alidei Mamon, Matar Sabala. So, in our Mishnah says that Alidei Mamon, if she's taken for monetary consideration, she's going to be permitted. Rav Yosef Vichule. And over here, we're not going to go through the entire Braisa again, meaning, at this point in time, you know the Braisa. So, Vahashkon da Alidei Mamon, Vikstani Tama de Edom Eidem Osa, Ha'in Edom Eidem Osa Lo. So now, what we have is seemingly a stira. Our Mishnah here in Ksuva says that if she was taken for monetary consideration, she is Tahora. The Braisa that describes this woman in Ashkelon that was taken is going to be Tamea unless there are witnesses. So Mishani, Amrav Shmuel, Barav Yitzchak Lo Kasha, Kan Sheyad Gisot, Tkifal Ovdei Kochavim, Kan Sheyad Ovdei Kochavim, Tkifal Atzman. And over here, a simple distinction that we already know, but the form, we're just formatting it differently. And the distinction is between whether or not it is a Jewish state lawful country, right? So now there is governance, there's a system of law under those circumstances. Now we're going to say that when they take her for financial consideration, they are not going to violate her. Masha ain't Kane. What happened in Ashkelon was under Plishti rule, and therefore, even though she was taken for financial consideration, she is going to be violated unless witnesses tell us otherwise. I did a fasha sasura. Okay, so. In our Mishnah, one more point to finish up from our Mishnah, and then we move on to the next Mishnah, and that is in the Mishnah, if she was taken for Dina Nefashas, meaning she was accused of some sort of crime, and now she's being held, being prepared to be executed, under those circumstances, we will assume, again, I'm going to say it like Rashi, we will assume that she had Bia Beratzon, and therefore she's going to be Aser to her husband. So, Ayide Nefashas Asura Amarav Kigon. So what the Gemara is going to do over here, it's a little bit challenging to fully understand what the Gemara is doing right now, but it seems that the Gemara is now going to give other examples where she's in such a dire strait that she probably is going to have relations baratzon. So Amrav Kagon, Nishe Diganve, right? The Girsa over here needs a little bit of touch up, but anyway, Nishe Diganve, wives of Ganovim. The way Rashi explains it, Hanishe Deganve, Shabalem Nitalim, Vider Chamakus, Afkir Beitam Vinashem. So their husbands are being hung, and what the government allows is basically anyone is able to, is allowed to loot the house. And as part of the house is also going to be the wives as well. So under those circumstances, we assume that the woman is in fact going to have be a beresim with others, even before their husbands were hung, I suppose. Levi Amar Kigon Isho Shel Ben Dunai. Another example would be the wife of Ben Dunai. So Ben Dunai, Elazar Ben Dunai, right? Rashi gives us his first name, and that is that he was a known murderer. Okay, for the few Jewish murderers that are out there. So the Gemara already introduced us to our first Jewish murderer. So Kigon Isho Shel Ben Dunai. So Amar Chizke Vehusha Nigmar Dinan Lahariga. Rav Yochanan Amar Fapishlo Nigmar Dinan Lahariga. Now, at this point in time, so are we going to be assuming that these women are going to be with other men before the Gemar Din, or even after the Gemar Din, or even before the Gemar Din? Machlokas Amarayim. At what point in time they're going to be mafkir themselves? But being that they know that they're in such a precarious and vulnerable position, chances are is that they did have bia with whoever ended up taking them. Okay. That takes us to the first part of today's daf. Again, why are we in these discussions? Meaning, obviously they're important. Obviously, the halachas over here that we're dealing with are unbelievably serious. But why are we here? Meaning, what do that has to do thematically with our parak? So I imagine that these are again other circumstances in which she's going to be believed on her own. So basically, what the Mishnah has told us is that under limited circumstances, and after having learning the Gemara, it's even more limited circumstances, that when a woman's taken, and not captive, but in other words, she was taken against a loan, and it was financial, and it'll say like the Gemara, and Yad Yisrael, and it was under the lawful state, so a law-binding state, so under those circumstances, she's going to be believed on her own to say that she was not violated. So they're just simply more examples. Okay, but in the course of learning these examples, we also learn that if you change any one of the variables, so she's not going to be believed on her own. Fine. Okay. Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, we're halfway down. We're starting the new Mishnah. Ir Shekavshu Charkom. So the city was under siege. So the unfortunately, unbelievably appropriate time to talk about a siege, right? We're Beina Mitzarim between Shiva Asar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. And so we are now commemorating the siege that took place around Yerushalayim. So Irsha Kavshu Karkom. So the city was successfully under siege. So Kol Kahanu Shenimtzu Besocha Psulos. So any Ashes Kohen. It says Kohanus over here. It means a woman who was married to a Kohen. And again, to remind ourselves of the halacha, and that is that if a woman has relations and she's an Ashes Kohen, it does not matter whether it was Barason or even Baones, she will be prohibited to her husband. And so over here now that the non-Jews successfully siege the city, so at that point in time, the unfortunate assumption is that this woman over here was violated. Therefore, also to her husband. Now, in terms of Edim, as long as witnesses, if witnesses go ahead and testify that she was not violated and that she was under supervision the whole time and not violated, so then the Edim will save her from having this assumption that she was with a non-Jewish man. Now, over here for Edim, you don't need two kosher Edim. Edim over here could be even one aid. It can even be somebody who's not normally non-kosher aid, meaning aid echad would work over here. Okay, this is an idea which we've expressed before, and we're going to say it again in today's daf, which is b'shvuya hekilu. Meaning that when a woman is taken captive, now over here, it's not so much she was taken captive, but still, as far as halacha is concerned, we're viewing this as a woman taken captive. Meaning, when the city was successfully sieged by non-Jews, so we assume now that every woman in the city has a status of a shvuya. As a result of that, so now we're going to fall under the halachas of shvuya, which is b'shvuya hekilu. One aid would be able to testify, even if it's somebody who is not normally a kosher aid. Similar to, not it's not the same, but similar to a desisha, right? When the husband went away and we don't know what happened to the husband, one aid, even a non-kosher aid, can come back and testify that he's dead. Here too, one aid, even a non-kosher aid, can testify that she remains untouched or unviolated. So viriminu, so that is the halacha we learned in our Mishnah. And immediately the Gemara turns now to another Mishnah. And this Mishnah would seem to run counter to what we just learned. Balasha Shabbat Leir B'Shas Shalom Chavis Psuchos Asuras Tumas Mutaros B'Shas Machama Ela Ve'Ela Mutaros Lefishayim Panay Lanasech. So if you have a Balashas, so a Balashas sounds like something similar to what we're describing over here in our Mishnah, some sort of siege. Anyway, so you have troops running through the city, and if it's Shas Shalom, so if it's a time of peace, meaning they're just simply marching through, but there was no war. So then, as far as the barrels are concerned, the barrels that are open are going to be aser. The barrels that are closed are going to be mutter. In other words, over here, the concern is stam yenam. So, yai nesach stam yenam. So if we have non-Jews going ahead and, let's simply say touching. Although, again, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah goes through these halachas in much more detail, right? But, okay, for our purposes right now, right, they're handling. Okay, I'm going to use a general term. They're handling the wine. So if they're handling the wine while but direct handling of the wine itself, meaning they're touching the actual wine itself, the wine now becomes yainesach, or probably more accurate, stam yenam. The wine is aser. Okay, let's say it's simple. So now, when they're coming through, so you have a whole bunch of non-Jews in the town, so b'shas shalom, so all wine now is going to, no, I'm sorry, not all wine. I take it back. The open barrels are going to be aser because it's easy access for them. And therefore, we assume they touched it, the actual wine. On the other hand, if the barrels are closed, they didn't touch the wine. However, if it's Shas Melchama, Eilav Eilam Mataros Lefishay and Panay Lanasech. But if it's right now wartime, and so it's chaotic. So oddly enough, it creates a kula, a leniency, in that now the wine, even of an open barrel, is going to be fine. Because right now, ain't nobody got time for wine right now. In other words, it's chaotic. Everyone's running around. So, what we have over here seemingly is a stira. In other words, in that Mishnah Avodah Zarah, what we described is that is b'shas mechama, no one's touching the wine. And meanwhile, when you have a siege, so we assume that the women were violated. So even if it's shas mechama, so Amar Rav Mari Labol Yesh Panai Lanasech Ein Panai. So Rav Mari says there's time for things that you want to do, and so right, it's unfortunate, but it speaks to the Yetzer Hara. In other words, the Gemara over here is just giving us a very, very accurate representation of the Yetzer Hara, and that is that to be with women, so the Yetzer Hara for that is really strong, and therefore they'll make time for women, but when it comes to wine, less so. In other words, they're not as strong as the Yetzer Hara to go ahead and to be Menaseh Chayin, and so therefore B'shas Mechama, we'll assume that they're not going to make time for doing any kind of they're not going to handle the wine. So Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Elazar Mishmei Dechizkiya Amar Kan Berkarkum Shel Osa Machus Kan Berkarkum Shel Machus Acheres. Another way to resolve the discrepancy between the Mishnayos, and that is that we have to look contextually at what kind of army is coming into town. Okay, so Karkum Shel Osa Machus, I'll try to present it to the best of my understanding. This is the way Rashi seems to present it. Karkum Shel Osa Machus means that basically it's the local government. So what are they doing marching into town? Meaning if it's a local government, is that what they're really looking to do is an annexation. Meaning that right now, you are basically on the border. Okay, it could be you're on the other side of the border, right? But what the government wants to do is annex. And now with an annexation, what are they looking to do? Obviously adopt you now as part of their country. Now, they're not doing that to be benevolent. They're doing it for the purposes of taxing. But still, the point is that at that point in time, we can assume that they're not going to violate the women. In other words, they want the people of that town to become, happy, but more importantly, tax-paying members of this country. And so therefore, under those circumstances, so the women are not going to be violated. If, on the other hand, it's just, there's no annexation, there's no financial gain, they're just conquering. So under those circumstances, now we have to be concerned that the women were in fact violated. So we're making a contextual difference between who's coming into, which army's coming in and for what purposes. Shel Oso Malchus, and the Gemara now here says, Shel Oso Malchus Nami, the Gemara assumes that we got it. Okay, I think I said it over as well as I could. And so now the Gemara is going to challenge. So the Gemara says, look, even if we're talking about annexation, okay, but these are soldiers, and right now they're soldiering. Okay, so, and you're telling me that every soldier is going to be compliant, and every soldier is not going to have his way with any of the women? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Kishim Hisham, Ro'ozu Etzu. So the Gemara says, there are guards. So the Gemara says, Yevsha Delo Neima Parta. Gemara says, please, guards. You know, they take naps. So the Gemara says, I can't imagine that guards are really going to be helpful over here. Amar Rabbi Levi Kagon, Demahadol Alamasa, Shushata Vikaba Vigavza, Vivza. So the Gemara says, is that, well, there are chains and there are dogs and there are geese. Okay, the geese part, by the way, I just think for a moment is like a little bit strange, a little funny. But anyway, but the point is that they set up some sort of security system in order to make sure that the soldiers, on one hand, a soldier, on the other hand, do not have their way with the local townspeople. They put up some sort of security measure. Okay, fine. So where are we right now? So we just basically resolve what seemingly is a steer between our mission and the mission of Avodah Zarah. Our Mishnah says that when a city is sieged by non-Jews, so unfortunately we assume that women over there were violated. The Mishnah of Avodah Zarah says they're not going to be doing Nisa Chayayin, and so we made a couple of distinctions. One, the distinction between the Yetzirah for violating women versus the Yetzirah of wine, they're not the same. And the other distinction is to look at why the army comes into town, and making a distinction between if it's for purposes of annexation, so then they're not going to violate the women. But if it's for the purposes of just simply conquering, so then they are. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Zavta Pliki Bar Rabbi Yehuda Nesiv Rabban Nechad Amar Kam Bekarkam Shal Osa Machus Kam Bekarkam Shel Machus Acheres Velo Kashilei Velo Midi. Okay. V'chad Kashilei Kohani Umishani Kigon De Mahad El Lamasa Sheshil Teka V'Gavza V'Ivza. So the Gemara brought down that it's a machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda Nesiv and Rabbanan in terms of how to resolve these two what seems to be discrepant Mishnayos. And again, the two answers that we just gave, and you didn't like the answer about local army looking to annex this this province over here. Yeah, we could set up guards, and the other one says no, you can't set up guards. Okay, Amar Rav Yehuda Bar Ava and Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Ashiyan im yesha machboa achas matzelas ala kahanas kulan. Okay, so we had an army coming into town. In other words, we're back to our Mishnah. Army comes into town, non-Jews, they laid siege. Unfortunately, the assumption is the women were violated. Now, the Gemara wants to know the following. What if, now, well, I'm sorry, before we get to the question, first a statement of fact. Well, under the circumstances where there is a place where all the women could hide, right? The Gemara calls it a machbo, some sort of cave, whatever, some sort of underground cellar where the women can go and hide successfully, and they're not going to be found by the sieging army. Under those circumstances, matzelas, meaning that they could successfully hide, and they will then remain muteris to their husbands, who are kohanim. By Rabbi Yirmiyahu machzekes halachas me'emau. Okay, now, with that stated, here's the question. Let's say there is a cellar. It can hide, but can only hide one woman. And obviously, we're talking about a town full of people where you have many women that are married to Kohanim. So, circumstances are, city was laid siege by non-Jews. There is a place to hide, but can only hide one woman at a time. So now, here's the question. The question is, are all the women now going to be permitted to their husbands to Kohanim? Because any given woman can hide in that, but the counter consideration is, it only hides one at a time. So me Amrinan Kochad Vachada Hainoha Odema Lo Aminan Lo Aminan. And now the question becomes, can we give the benefit of doubt to every woman individually, even though there's no way that every woman could have hidden in such a small cellar? So Umaishna me Shne Shvila Mechatame Vechatar. So the Gemara says, well, let's go to a case that we're familiar with. We've gone over a number of times throughout Shas. Two pathways. One is Tameh, one's Tahor, meaning along one pathway, there is no way you're going to be avoiding Tumah. Tumah takes up the entire length of the pathway, or I should say better, the entire width of the pathway. And so therefore, you know you walk down one of the two pathways, one is Tameh, one is Tahor, But in this halachic game of Russian roulette, you don't know which one you walk down. So v'halach v'echad mehem v'asataros v'achaver v'halach b'sheni v'asataros. And so now two people walk down one pathway, the other one walked down the other pathway. Each one of them was handling taharos. And so now, what is this called? Suffolk. Now, if we look collectively, we know one of them walked down the tumah because the two of them walked on two different pathways. But if we were to look at each one individually, which pathway did you walk on? I don't know. One of the two. I don't know which one. So as we handle, as we field each question individually, so what can we say? So we know what the halachas are. Safek tumah, birishus harabim, sveko tahor. So for each one asking individually, we know how to answer. What if they come together? Oh, that's going to become problematic. So Rabbi Yehuda Amar im nishal zebif nasma v'zebif nasma taharos v'shneim ka'achas tameos. Rabbi Yossi Amar ben kachu ben kach tameim. So we have a machlokas tanaim in terms of whether or not they come independently or collectively, where the way the machlokas first sounds like is that according to Tanakama, or no, Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if they come collectively, we're going to have to tell them they're tamei. But if they're coming individually, we'll tell them that they're tahor. And Rabbi Yossi says, under both circumstances, we're going to tell them they're tamei. But the Gemara goes on. Rabbi Yochanan says, look, if they're coming individually and we can respond to them individually, good. We're going to say tahor. Why? Safik tuma brishos rabim sveko tahor. Good. And if they're coming both at the same time, we have no choice. Meaning because we know one of them walked down a tamei path, and therefore, we're going to say it's tamei. Lo nechliku ela bevali shol alava achaver, mar medamile lebas achas, umar medamile lebezeach hazeh. And the only point of disagreement between the Tanayim is where one is coming asking both for himself and on behalf of his friend. Then we have a machlokis, because then what is it comparable to? Is it comparable to them asking individually, or is it comparable as them asking collectively? So the Gemara says, so over here, when it comes to the women, so is it that we're poskening for each woman individually, or we're just simply poskening for all the women and collectively? And since it's impossible for all the women to be hiding in one cellar that fits only one woman at a time, so therefore, we're going to have to pasken that they're all tameos. Hachi hashta. The Gemara says, look, it was a good attempt to compare the cases. The cases are not comparable. Because, again, let's consider. In the case of the two pathways, we know there's tuma on one of the two pathways. That's a given. And it's just now a question of which pathway did he walk down. So under those circumstances, the starting point is, there was tumah. And now it's just a question of which pathway he walked down. And because there were two men involved, each one walking down a separate pathway, and they're coming collectively, so then we have to respond. And over there, because they're coming at the same time, so therefore we have to say that they're tummy. But over here in our case, were the women violated? We don't even know. Meaning there is strong suspicion to believe they were. You have an army coming through, an army of non-Jews coming through, but we don't even know for sure. Meaning it's not even a given that any woman was violated. It is just simply a legitimate concern that, and by the way, the concern is so strong, she's going to be prohibited to her husband. But the concern is built on not a known, but a strong reason to believe that a woman was violated. But the starting point is not the same. Since the starting point is not the same, and now we have a good reason to add to this, that she is tahar, notably, there is a hiding cellar. It only hides one woman at a time. But in other words, but since the starting point is not, we don't know for sure she was violated. And on top of that, there's also now at least another reason to suggest that she's tahara. The case is different. By Rav Ashi, Amar lo nichbeti v'lo nidmei mahu. So Rav Ashi asked the final question. Lo nichbeti v'lo nidmei. So a woman says, look, right, same circumstance. Again, let's just set it up, right? Non-Jewish army came through town. Okay, the women are now under the status of being considered nishbeis. They're held captive, and therefore they're going to be violated. right? And therefore, those married to Kohanim now, unfortunately, going to have to terminate their marriage. Ah, but there's a hiding cellar, and so that where they can hide, and if they hide in that cellar, so they're going to now be presumed to be Tahara. What if in that circumstance, woman comes up over to Basin afterwards and said, look, I'm going to be totally honest with you. I didn't go to the hiding cellar. At the same time, however, I wasn't violated. Okay? So now you understand, by the way, that this is now thematically connected to our entire perek. So here's an example where, under normal circumstances, you can't testify about yourself, but she could have said something a lot better. She could have said, I went to the cellar. She didn't say that. So lo nichbeisiv lo nimeisiv mahu mi amrinan ma li. Sorry. Ma li l'shaker odem lo amrinan lo amrinan. So over here, it's similar to a pesha as a pesha iter. It's on the other hand, maybe not. So umaysh la me'ahu maysa da ugavra da agar lechamer lechavre. So the Gemara says, okay, but over here, is it going to be any different than the following case? We're talking here about a car rental, but of course, back in the day, the cars were donkeys. Okay, so it's a donkey rental. So in other words, and upon car rental, so you're signing that long rental agreement. Okay, you read it? Me neither. So the, but it's long. And basically, right, I haven't read it, so I can't really speak from knowledge. But basically, it says you abuse the car, right, you're going to pay. Actually, it says you're going to be paying for anything, which is why it's called, there's something called insurance. But anyway, so over here, we're learning now of a donkey agreement, a donkey rental agreement, and the terms of the agreement. And that is, so, de'agar lechamer lechavre, he rented out a donkey to his friend, amar le lo tezo ba'orcha denar pakod. So here's the rental agreement. It's really simple. You see the river Nar Pakod? Don't take the donkey down the river Nar Pakod. Okay, the donkey's going to drown. You know the donkey's going to drown over there. Like, don't do it. In other words, and that's the terms of the agreement. Deika Maya. So Zilba Orcha Denarish, the Lake Amaya. So the only pathway that I'm allowing you to go down is the pathway of Narish. There's no water over there. The donkey's not going to drown. Okay. You know where the story's going. Everyone knows where the story's going. Okay. So Va'azul Iyuba Orcha Denar Pakod. So he goes down the Nar Pakod way. And the Umeis Chamra. I'm assuming a renter right now. All right. I'm assuming a renter. Okay. So the... Okay, so the so now he goes down the Nar Pakod path, and also the Kama de Rava, and they go to Rava Amalei in Beorcha de Nar Pakod Azlei Mi Olohava Maya. So he goes to Rava. In other words, he takes him to court, Rava's court, and in Rava's court now here you have the litigation, and in the cross examination, so he says, okay, I'm going to be honest, I went down the Nar Pakod path. I know he told me not to, but I did. But. There was no water today on the Nar Pakod path. I'm telling you, right, for some reason, the water was really low. In other words, right, I went against the terms of the rental, but I'm telling you there was no water down the Nar Pakod path. So I'm a Rava, Mali Lashakar, Ibai Amale Beorcha Denar Shazle. So Rava said, okay, look, in other words, what he could have said is he went down the Narish path, but instead he's telling us the truth. Okay, so let's believe him.
Where's the dead donkey? Where is he?
No, the donkey's dead.
So where is he? If he wasn't now Pekoid, he couldn't be Banerish.
Okay, fine. Okay, I don't know. I don't know the Messias well enough. But okay, anyway, the donkey's dead. So Abai says to Rava, let's reconsider over here. And that is that, look, this is Mali Lishaker. It's like a Migu, but it's B'makam Edim. But come on. There are witnesses over here. Now, witnesses over here, the term witnesses, we're going to be using a little bit loosely. And that is, witnesses over here means that everybody knows there's water running down the Nar Pakod River. Right? It's like Anan Sahade. It's like this is a known entity. So in other words, yes, Malu Lashaka is a powerful tool in terms of giving somebody nemunas. That part's true. But it can't stand up against Edom. Edom, obviously, is the best piece of evidence. This is tantamount to Edom, the fact that there's water over here. So over here, what did we just learn together? Then the case of the rental. So what happens is that Anan Sahat, I'm sorry, the Migu, the Mali Lashakir, is not going to stand up against Edom. So over here, can't we use a similar argument? Then the Hashta Hasam. So the Gemara says, the comparison, once again, is a false comparison. So the Gemara says no. Again, it's going to be the same point that we made, but we get to reiterate it, and this is what's called chazara. And that is that in the case of the donkey and the river, so yes, Ma'ali L'Shakar is not going to stand up against Edom. But Edom over there means we all know that there's running water down the Narpakod River. In other words, for him to come in and say the river was dry, it was a dry riverbed, that's ridiculous. We know otherwise. That's tantamount to Edom. It's not going to stand up against Edom. Over here, in the case of the woman in the city that was laid siege by the non-Jewish army. So in this scenario over here, again, do we know she was violated? No, we don't know she was violated. We have strong suspicion to believe she was violated, but we don't know. So over here, the starting point is not that we know she was violated, but right, probably. But now that the starting point is probably, not definitely, so now if there is mitigation against that, i.e., there's a hiding place, she says that, look, I could have hidden the hiding place, I didn't, but I'm still Tahora. So the starting point is we don't know definitely, but rather probably. So then to that, Ma'ali L'Shakar will mitigate against that. Okay, it's the same point that we made earlier. We get to just simply say it again. Let's go a little bit further. Afilu Shifcha Didem Mehemna. Sorry. Im Yesh Edem Afilu Eved Afilu Shifcha Nemanim. Okay. So, what did we say? That she has a status now of a Shvuya. We know that testimony to say that Shvuya was not violated. The standards of Edus is significantly lowered. In that you can be one aid. It doesn't even have to be a Kosher aid. For a Shvuya, he kilu. The rabbis were Mekel. So, Afilu Shifcha Dida, the Gemara, the Mishnah did not make any distinction which shifcha it is, even her own shifcha. Now, her own shifcha to her is going to either, this is the way Rashi presents it, either is going to be extraordinarily sympathetic to her mistress. Okay, fine. So, it's going to be significantly sympathetic to her. Either A, she really likes her, or B, she's terrified of her. But by the way, Rashi says both. So but one way or another, however, so she is going to be significantly compromised in having any kind of objectivity regarding her mistress. And our Mishnah makes it sound like even if it's her own shifcha, we'll believe. And meanwhile, that's hard to imagine. So Virimenu, and not only is it hard to imagine, but consider the following, and that is we have the following. So here's the Mishnah in Gittin. Okay. We're in a lot of places today. So the viriminu lotis yachnimo el api edim v'afilu api eved afilu v'api shivcha chutz mishivchas mimnei sheliba gas b'shivchasa. Okay, once again, it's been issued. So husband and wife, or in this case, ex-husband, ex-wife, cannot seclude themselves one with another. It will invalidate the get. The get now is called the get yashan. When we get to Gittin, we're going to discuss this in more detail. Right now, all we need to know is just simply the fact of the matter is that seclusion will invalidate a get for the ex-husband, ex-wife. Okay, now, so what do you do? It's very simple. You set up Edom. In other words, you don't seclude yourself with your ex-wife, but rather the only time you're together with her is only with Edom. Okay. But Edom over here, once again, the threshold of what is Edom significantly lowered. In other words, it doesn't have to be two, it could be one. And it doesn't have to be a kosher aid, it could be anybody. The only exclusion is going to be, it can't be your shifcha, meaning we're talking to the woman, right? It cannot be the woman's shifcha, because again, her shifcha is going to be such a loyalist that, and I know this is a little bit indelicate, but Rashi says it, I'll say it, and she'll have relations with her ex-husband, even with her shifcha right there. Okay, so she's not going to be serving as any kind of deterrent. And so over here now, we seem to be at odds with one another. Our Mishnah here in Ksuvah seems to indicate that anyone could testify that she remains a Tahora, even her own Shivcha. And the Mishnah in Gittin would indicate, no, that her own Shivcha is going to be such a loyalist to her that will not be a deterrent. Okay, so, and the Gemara is going to give answers to this. Okay, let's pause over here. Okay, and I know it'd be better if we got down to the Mishnah on the bottom. Okay, we'll pause over here because the whatever it'll take a couple minutes to really get through all the various answers in terms of how to make a distinction between our Mishnah over here and the Mishnah in Gittin. Okay, regarding her very own Shifcha. Okay, let's quickly recap our daf today. Okay, where do we start? So we started once again back in the Mishnah on Chavav Amid Beis. The Mishnah over there describes where the woman was taken. If it was for financial reasons that she was taken, she's Tahara. If it was for Din and Nefashos, so then she is Tameah. And Tahara Tameah over here, the way Rashi presents it, is that even if her husband's the Yisroel, so we assume that once she is being held to be executed, so then she's willingly going to have relations with her captor. That's the way Rashi presents it. Again, I said at the beginning of today's shiur, I'm going to state it one more time. In the summary, this is a really important and complicated issue in terms of woman being held captive and to try to gain sympathy with her captors to save her life. Is that considered ratzon? Is that considered ones? That's a really important question. Again, the Gemara doesn't really litigate that issue, but from Rashi, it sounds like we know. But again, the issue is much more complex, and I'll leave it out like that. Okay, the first part of today's daf is that what we did is make distinctions between whether when she was taken for monetary consideration, whether it was a lawfully run government, and therefore even her captors are going to abide by the law and not touch her, or it was more of a lawless state. And we quoted a braisa about a woman who was taken in Ashkelon and compared it against our Mishnah and try to resolve between the Mishnah and the braisa. Good. The Gemara gave us a couple of other examples of other types of women that are just going to have willing relations with their captors. Okay, the wife of the killer. Okay, anyway, right, a lot of exciting stuff in today's daf. Okay, right, a lot of characters. Okay, and then the next Mishnah. The Mishnah talked about a city that was under siege, and the city that was under siege, a non-Jewish army comes in and holds the city under siege, and the Mishnah says that that all women in that city have the status of a shvuya, and therefore are going to assume to be violated, and therefore going to be ushered to the husbands who are kohanim. Okay, unless witnesses can testify that she is tahora. So our first discussion in the course of this sugya was seemingly a steer between this mishnah and the mishnah of Avodah Zarah. The Gemara gave a couple of answers how to resolve the difference between the two, and then the question becomes the following: being that we don't know for sure that she was violated, and there's a seller for hiding. So is that seller now going to give all the women there the status of being a tahara? Yes. And then the fine detail. What if the seller is not big enough for all the women in that city? What if the seller can only hide one of them? Is that going to be sufficient? The Gemara was inclined to say yes over there as well. Cases where the Gemara compared it to other cases where it was two pathways, one tamei, one tahor. A rental agreement, a clear violation of the rental agreement. So those are cases where we are not going to be compromising in those cases. But here, we're going to bend a little bit more. But the reason why we're bending a little bit more over here in this case is because we don't know for sure that these women were violated. It's only strong suspicion. But since the starting point is only strong suspicion, so therefore, whatever we could say that mitigates that, we're going to allow it to mitigate. And then finally, we set ourselves up for tomorrow morning, where the Mishnah here says that anyone can testify about her, even her own Shifcha. The Mishnah in Gittin does not feel that way. Her own Shifcha is going to be so sympathetic to her mistress, therefore, she's not going to be serving as any kind of deterrent from her having relations with her ex-husband, and thereby disqualifying the get. We have to resolve between the two Mishnayos, and we will do so, Mi'etz Hashem, to the beginning of tomorrow's year.